Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Helen.
And I'm Stephen.
And this is the New Statesman podcast for another special edition. I think we've decided basically we have to do a special edition every time a party leader resigns. I think that's our new bar, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're defining party leader in a generous sense. You have to have...
Actually, we didn't do one for the Greens, to be fair, so let's row back on that.
Yeah.
But Nigel Farage, erstwhile leader of UKIP, has resigned. He doesn't appear to be on the brink of unresigning again, right? This time he has definitely resigned.
Yes, I mean, I think the thing last time is, one, I think there was a sense of, I don't want to go out a failure, which was very much where he would have been if he had resigned after failing to win Thanet South. And secondly, there was the realisation in standing down, he would be handing control of UKIP to his enemies.
He's not entirely dodged that bullet now, has he? I mean, well, let's go through what passes for UKIP, right, as an organisation. The party's only MP tweeted a sunglasses emoji when Nigel Farage steps out. It is pretty well known that they hate each other.
The problem is, if we start talking about Douglas Carswell, I'm going to single-handedly nuke our universal family-friendly... I hate Douglas Carswell. I actually think Douglas Carswell is worse than Nigel Farage. At least Nigel Farage knows what he is, right? That just, like, he's... I mean, he's just one of those people where, like, I don't understand how he's feted as an intellectual and a man of principle. This is a man who complains about angry nativism, who just got done with a campaign about how there were 75 million and Turks coming to steal your granny, who talks about, you know, honesty and has been a lifelong advocate of dismantling the NHS, who ran on 350 million for the NHS and is now pretending it never happened. People think he's an intellectual because he looks weird. No, actually, he's just a weird-looking liar who defected to UKIP because he knew they were going to lose his seat. The one thing I'm really hoping is that Nigel Farage, before he quits public life, will have time to purge Douglas Carswell.
That's good. My reasons for disliking Douglas Carswell are slightly more tangential, which is that I was once in the Sunday Politics green room, and my fellow panellists included Toby Young, teacher botherer Toby Young, and Douglas Carswell went, "We should give this man a round of applause for saving Britain's education system," or something similar. Needless to say, there was no round of applause. I'm not really... Peter Oborne tried to make me give Daniel Hannan a round of applause after we recorded Week in Westminster 2 weeks ago. It's just, I'm not...
You really do spend a lot of time in studios with terrible men.
I'm not giving people rounds of applause for doing their jobs at the expense of often, you know, lots of other people. Anyway, so yeah, if you want to urge me to give someone a round of applause, just note that I'm not an applauder. But yeah, so Douglas Carswell backed Vote Leave, and Nigel Farage backed Leave.eu, along with big UKIP baron. I was going to say big UKIP backer Aaron Banks. Who I'm sure is a figure we shall return to again soon, who seems to be now saying that Andrea Leadsom is his favourite candidate for the Tory leadership, which to me sounds like a kiss of death.
Although actually I feel I should take this moment to do a slight U-turn on my very confident prediction that you needed to be from Eton to survive multiple rounds, because what I had underestimated was Michael Gove's ability to self-destruct fairly early.
But this is the thing. I think you're in a golden position now because you've got such a reputation for predicting things right that you can probably, through confirmation bias, people will only notice from now on when you get things right.
Okay, well, I probably shouldn't have drawn attention to the fact that... I mean, the difference is, right, is I think, in general, if you are a Conservative long-shot candidate, you need to be from Eton, or you need to be Andrea Leadsom, and for it to turn out that one of your opponents decides to...
kamikaze for the rest of the race. For you to be the true representative of an ideological faction that cannot be appeased or bought off, is not amenable to compromise in any form, that is absolutely ultra in its in its beliefs, right? I think even for some of the people that are backing Andrea Leadsom, even Michael Gove is not really properly Brexity enough, which is kind of mad. But to return to UKIP, so we now have the thrilling spectacle of a UKIP leadership contest. People who you would... So the party's deputy leader, Paul Nuttall, is kind of... I'm going to say he's Scouse, and then am I going to get told off? He is Scouse, isn't he? That's not me being racist against Northerners by not understanding the difference between a Merseyside accent and a Wirral accent.
Oh, no, they you're allowed to bracket them all in as...
oh, good. Okay, good.
As Scousers. I mean, I think that it's one of those things where I think people from Liverpool are a bit sniffy about people from the surrounding area trying to take the glory of being in one of the North's greatest cities. But I was being serious, by the way. I love the city of Liverpool. But people from the Wirral like to bathe in the reflected glory of Liverpool. So I think it's fine to say.
So there's him. There is Stephen Wolfe, who is one of their MEPs, who I think is really interesting because he is mixed race. So I think in terms of putting him front and centre of a party that often gets accused of racism and nativism...
They can literally do this. Some of my best friends are...
Some of my best party leaders are black.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, he does kind of look tanned. As someone who's also mixed race, I'm allowed to say that. He does just look like he spent some time in a sunbed.
Yeah, okay. And then we also have Diane James, who survives the Farage era, who is quite... Also in that kind of slightly Leadsom-y kind of, you know, definitely would have a proper hairbrush and use anti-macassars.
They just have the vibe of the sort of person who... would be very unhappy if you ate a biscuit not over a plate.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what I feel like.
Got those little mini Hoovers. Those.
Yeah, you know, my mum has a windscreen wiper that she keeps in the shower. You know, like the de-icer thing, so you can clean the shower individually after every use.
I'm not going to make any comment about people who do that because my in-laws have one of those, and I think that's a perfectly normal thing to do.
Yeah, me too. Cleanliness is next to godliness, and it's definitely not. You know, let it go, rinse it down. But it's a shower, it's self-cleaning. If your shower's dirty, that is. Anyway, that's a digression. But also Suzanne Evans, who didn't survive the Farage era, who I always thought was quite a sensible moderate Tory who had inexplicably ended up in UKIP, was a good debating performer. Got suspended for disloyalty for 6 months in March. I think Douglas Carswell has been trying to bring her back into the fold so far without success. Who do you think is best placed to take up the mantle of the Nige?
The interesting thing is what appears to have happened with UKIP is although they basically take posh voters from the Conservatives and working class voters from the Labour Party, but the interesting commonality is they take people, they basically, UKIP voters, the commonality between both sides of both parties they take from is they take basically self-made people without degrees from the Conservative Party who've earned a lot of money but they didn't go to university, and people who left school at 16 but who have not become self-made wealthy who vote for the Labour Party. My impression of their membership from the unscientific metric of having gone to their party conference is their membership is much more heavily drawn from the posh ex-Tory side.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you see a lot more sort of stripy trousers, big, you know, golf blazers, a lot of blazers with gold buttons. I think that probably the people, the ex-Labour voters don't turn up to UKIP party conference.
Yeah, and which, I mean, is interesting because I think if I were a management consultant and I went into UKIP, I'd say, you've kind of maxed out what your Conservative appeal. And if they go for Leadsom, to be honest, you're probably going to lose some of that vote. But you've got a massive growth opportunity in the Labour Party. Go for Paul Nuttall. My instinct is Stephen Wolfe, having thrown shade only minutes ago at his relative blackness. My instinct is probably too black to have that appeal. Whereas we know from Europe that having a reasonable seeming woman is a great asset to a far-right party. So Suzanne Evans, Diane James would be quite good, but my guess is Farage would not have stepped down now if he did not know for certain he was not making a prize of his party to Carswell and Evans. So Paul Nuttall, maybe?
Well, there we are. This is what I mean. This is, I'll probably shift the betting markets now. You saying that, Stephen?
Well, the betting markets are terrible.
Like, can we actually? That's a really good point. Can we address this? Because I feel like we should. No one is really daring to say this, but people go, "Well, the odds have shifted very greatly in favor of Article 50 not being triggered." And you go, "Well, but only about 30 people in the country have got any insight into whether or not that's really going to happen." And I doubt they're the ones who are up at, you know, on Paddy Power at midnight putting money on it. Everyone in the betting markets is purely driven by what they think other people are doing and some vague rumours that they heard on Twitter.
Yeah, and also the thing is the bookies are primarily not aiming to make money on political betting. It's an advert for all of their other betting. It's the easiest way to get your name in print. It's why Paddy Power did that story about paying out on a Corbyn victory. I had several bets on a Corbyn victory, one of them with Paddy Power, and I can tell you that they did not.
Didn't I have a bet on the Corbyn victory as well that you put on for me?
No, you never actually gave me the money, right?
Right. I think it was like £8 that you owe me.
Okay, I think I do owe you £8. Anyway, this is
all. It's fine. I'll tell you what, we can put it on when Corbyn has to run again, and then we can again bet on a Corbyn victory, and we can really double our winnings that
That's
way.
That's true, yeah. We'll be quid to... So really, I should have talked Corbyn down a bit just to maximise the amount of money to be made on that particular contest. But this is the thing, like, the bookies are aiming to advertise their other wares and also to entice bets. So take, you know, the referendum or any 50-50 example.
Or a Tory leadership race. They'll give you, you know, 100-1 on, like, Mr. Blobby or whatever, because they want people to run stories about that. I remember when there was a great thing about who was going to be Newsnight's political editor, and then, like, you could have got odds on me to do it, and I was like, well, I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen because I am me. But clearly someone had just chucked in a load of names that they thought were vaguely plausible.
They thought were plausible.
I also wonder if those kind of things are a bit like the school nativity play, where the more people you put in them, the more people then feel obligated to talk about it.
Yeah, there is also an element of, like, people want to be like, oh, look, me, I've been... I, for example, did not fall into this trap when they were doing this for BBC political editor.
Was your name being mentioned?
It's one of those things. The thing is, you don't want to be like the... It's one of those things. I think it's okay to talk up if you're like... if your odds aren't insulting. But I think I had odds of something like 30-1. And that's basically like the bookies think you're a bit of a joke, right? You know, like...
I think that's quite good odds, given that you started in journalism about 4 years ago. I mean, it'd be a meteoric ascent. It'd be like shadow cabinet level in its kind of quick ascension.
I'm not saying that I didn't feel I wasn't a joke candidate for BBC political editor. I just wasn't sure I was happy with Ladbrokes publicly drawing attention to the fact I was a joke candidate for BBC political editor. Actually, the Conservative leadership race is a classic example. Whoever it is who ends up fighting Theresa May among the members will have longer odds than her to entice more bets. The reality is that most bookmakers will privately say, yeah, it's 50-50 chance, because once you're in that final two, you know, you've got a good a shot as anyone.
Here's a question. Should I put some money on Donald Trump to win the US presidential race?
No.
Come on, Cassandra.
No, I mean, I don't know as much about the United States politics as I perhaps should, seeing as, you know, obviously it is the only democratic, for a given value of the word, superpower in the world. But, I mean, I just feel like there are so many polls showing more than half of Americans say they're frightened of what would happen if he won. I just think, basically, you don't win an election if people in your own party are openly conflicted about whether or not they should vote for you or the other guy, which feels oddly appropriate to the other story in British politics at the moment.
Go on. Alex Jones from the one show level of gear change.
Obviously the Labour Party, this is probably the bit most likely to have gone out of date before we record.
From what I know, it was very hard to get anyone out on the broadcasters yesterday to defend Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, you know, Diane Abbott, bless her, has been more than pulling her weight in that sense. Emily Thornberry was on Peston. But, you know, apart from that, they do seem to have kind of slightly gone into lockdown. One of the things I thought was interesting was that John McDonnell actually came out on Friday and made a speech about what he, you know, what the Labour Party want from Brexit, and talked about, you know, free movement is over, basically, accepting that, which is kind of a... a fascinating thing to do, because I don't think many people who voted Corbyn will like just accepting that free movement of people is over. He kind of gets away with it by being John McDonnell, right? Whereas if it was Andy Burnham or Yvette Cooper had said that, there would be, we'd now be kind of clanging in our ears.
I mean, so the line they had afterwards was, it's not that he's saying, that he's just talking about the reality of Brexit. It's that it's not a red line. Their red lines are access to the single market, access to the European Investment Bank, guarantee the existing rights of EU migrants already here, and then two other red lines that I have temporarily forgotten.
But that's the point, isn't it? Is that access to the single market, then unless we work out some new bespoke deal that we managed to get past 27 other countries who would probably, you know, be quite interested in such a deal for themselves, does mean free movement. It feels kind of, again, another slightly unsustainable, somebody not acknowledging that that's what the trade-off currently is. Or if they think that trade-off is only, you know, can be negotiated, kind of advancing what they would offer in return.
Well, so there's a view in some parts of Whitehall, and what you could do is if you gave the City of London, I'm talking about the actual jobs there, not, you know, the physical City of London, to Frankfurt and Paris, that would allow you to strike a deal in which you have three of the four freedoms, capital, goods, services, but not the free movement of people. So it is significant that basically the currently ascendant factions in all of the political parties are signalling that they think free movement is definitely a goner, with the Labour Party. I mean, because the interesting thing, the other reason why he can get away with doing it is, my impression from talking to party members is, if there was a candidate out there who was offering the same economics than both John McDonnell and Rachel Reeves on the backbenches are basically offering, coupled with a fresher face and an unambiguously pro-European position, they would comfortably beat whoever they faced. The difficulty is, this candidate doesn't exist in the Parliamentary Labour Party, and pro-Europeanism has always been a unity position as far as the leadership is concerned, to get them through the referendum and to get the soft left to sign up to the Corbyn project. The soft left in Parliament has quit the Corbyn project very publicly, and the referendum's over, so it kind of just makes sense to, like, quietly ditch it. Because in terms of some of the economic remodelling they'd like to do, EEA membership is a bit of a, yeah, it's not that helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we probably need to talk about in the coming weeks is what a left-wing Brexit. I mean, we had all this stuff about Lexit, as if that was ever going to happen under a Tory government. You know, but what actually the left should be asking for in these incredibly long, involved negotiations that are going to happen, because it's already clear that a very right-wing version of Brexit is emerging. George Osborne in the Financial Times saying he wants corporation tax at 15%. The Sunday Times did a blueprint for Britain, which was basically kind of, you know, we need to cut tax and regulation to the bone, because that's the only way to keep people here. I mean, I think this is a looming problem for Theresa May if she does end up in the final two, because all of these things, you know, which awful thing do you want to do, or, you know, which controversial thing do you want to do? Well, actually, I, in an ideal world, I wouldn't do either of them, because I wouldn't leave the European Union, but I have to do this, is a very difficult thing to sell.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing, I mean, so the only data point we have about Tory members is that YouGov poll pre-Leadsom being in the race, in which he was the only candidate who defeated Boris Johnson. The interesting question is, Boris Johnson, we know, had various morality problems. Well, anecdotally, we know with Conservative members, which made him slightly more vulnerable to Theresa May. Andrew Leadsom is more of an unknown quantity. Whether or not she can kind of beat her is sort of is moot. But there is the possibility that Theresa May will basically fight a better version of Yvette Cooper's leadership campaign, where she'll go, look, I'm ready to be Prime Minister. We need, you know, a strong hand on the tiller, etc., etc. And she can basically pivot from all of the questions. And she is signing up fairly serious supporters. I mean, David Davis.
Chris Grayling running the campaign.
Yeah, these are people who give her leave-based credibility.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Okay, so let's predict our rounds of Tory voting, okay? So in the first round, I'm going to say Liam Fox goes out in the first round.
Yep, Fox.
Gone. Yeah. Then I'm going to say, controversially, I'm going to say Gove in the next round.
Yeah, it feels to me that there will be... So the current... So the interesting thing is, obviously, you know, Liam Fox's seven MPs, or however many it is at time of recording, are not... the kind of people you'd expect to bolster Stephen Crabbe's more soft version of conservatism. However, my guess is what will happen is there will be some bolting from Michael Gove. There'll be some Brexiters who bolt to Andrea Leadsom. There may be some people who decide to try and settle up with Theresa May while they still can. So yeah, I think that feels right to me.
I don't know, it just feels like if you win and, if you go into the contest on that basis, you've got no basis then to, like, this is the Corbyn problem all over again, right? If you are serially disloyal, then it becomes very hard to have people who are, incredibly loyal to you. So I feel like that could be a problem. And then Crabbe out, and then Leadsom versus May in a final head-to-head.
Yeah, that does feel like where we're heading. I mean, the one variable is
Michael Gove and his ability to knife fellow Tories.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's like, it is really worth noting that Andrea Leadsom is still only a junior energy minister. She has not had the shaking out by the political press.
In 2014, when she became city minister, there were stories about the fact that her brother-in-law, I think, is based in Guernsey. She has trusts for her children, which is classically one of the things you would do to be more efficient in terms of inheritance tax. Perfectly legal, but who knows how that's going to be regarded. And also that she had used offshore companies in her buy-to-let. Now, this is proof once again that I'm not a Tory voter, but I find buy-to-let as a really difficult thing. I would really struggle to vote for somebody who had a big buy-to-let empire, personally. But I know that doesn't bother Tory electorates, because quite a lot of them have probably got buy-to-let empires as well.
And this is the thing. Then a lot of my instinct, because when you're talking to Labour MPs and Labour staffers, everyone, regardless of what side of this division they're on, goes, oh God, it's awful, I think we might split. And then to cheer themselves up, everyone goes, oh, so which one of them would you prefer? And I think Theresa May is far and away, of the three, the consensus candidate of people who don't like the Conservative Party but are aware that one of them is going to have to run the country for 4 years. The difficulty is whether or not Andrea Leadsom is the candidate preferred by more people who are actually inside the Conservative Party. She looks a lot like the average Tory member, in her 50s, independently wealthy, has children, etc., etc. A woman, which I seem to recall the Conservative Party is slightly more feminine than the Labour Party.
In what terms of what?
In its membership.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, but then it's hard to say, because the Labour Party is very blokey as well. Yeah. Well, certainly it has already elected a female leader. It has already showed that if it doesn't find strong women alarming. In fact, the Daily Mail ran a picture of Theresa May in the same sort of blue suit that Maggie Thatcher once wore, along with a full page thing of Theresa in her own words.
Actually, that's something we should talk about. The Mail.
What, Margaret Thatcher?
No, the Mail going for Michael Gove. I mean, we are talking a level of coverage which is so bad that, even Jeremy Corbyn would be surprised to get that level of going over.
Yeah, and I heard that Sarah Vine went into the office the day after the announcement that they... the day that they were preparing the paper that then they would come out for Theresa May, which must have been uncomfortable. But, not really my problem, really.
It does feel as if, by very publicly suggesting that the Mail was in the bag for him, they've triggered...
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to someone yesterday who said, we're talking about that email that was leaked about whether or not that was accidental or deliberate. Someone said, well, do you think she would have referred to him as Dacre/Murdoch rather than as Paul, which, somebody that they work together? And actually, there is a slight dismissiveness. When people are trying to attack the right-wing press, they say, Dacre Murdoch, right? That's not how people talk about, somebody that Michael Gove worked for in Rupert Murdoch and was close to, and someone that Sarah Vine currently works to and, sees pretty often. So I think that's an interesting, say what you like about the Daily Mail. One of the things that I find consistently impressive about it is its cussedness at just not being lent on or sort of talked to. I don't agree with what it says, but in terms of standing up to politicians, it absolutely does. It doesn't play favourites in that sense.
Yeah, no. Whereas, like I said, it was interesting. So I was doing the paper review with that edition. It's the way that the Times and the Sun, you can see, are kind of lining up behind Gove,
whereas the male is gone properly the other way.
But also declared really early as well. You feel like the Times and the Sun are waiting to see whether or not, if it all goes horribly wrong for Michael Gove, then they'll happily jump on board the HMS Teresa.
Yeah.
But the male has made its call before it's entirely clear how it's going to all shake out, right?
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Rare bit of praise from the New Statesman to the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
It's a new consensual age that
this
we're
is the weird,
all living
terrifying
in.
Terrifying era of Brexit. Dogs and cats living together.
Well, unless anyone else has resigned, shall we say goodbye to the podcast for now?
Yeah, back on Thursday.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast, presented by me, Helen Lewis, and produced by Anna Leskovitz. You can find us every week at newstatesman.com/podcast or on iTunes. Our theme music is Devil with the Devil by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Trust in politics is broken, so can we get UK politics working again?
That was the last time we were happy. 2012.
I'm Beth Rigby, Sky's political editor. Join me every week with Labour's Jess Phillips and Conservative peer Ruth Davidson for some electoral dysfunction.
This idea of nuance has completely left politics. Yeah.
Together we'll focus on the policies that could deliver political satisfaction. Follow Electoral Dysfunction wherever you get your podcasts.